So you go back to page 111, the last line. It is a description, a continuation of the description of that subtle world, the world of form, not the world of material shape. These forms are complete, perfect in themselves, because they are not really open to any kind of gradual decay or deterioration. In the world of matter, there is slowly kind of a breaking up. Something breaks down, something becomes spoiled. Whereas these are absolute, complete, because they are the world of that not physical, but subtle physical world, where the weight of the material, you might say, inertia is not there. There is no inertia, there is no dullness, there is no heaviness, but there is also no change. It's not a world where there is a psychic presence. In our world, there is imperfection. We have a physical existence, but there is also the possibility of trying to come out of that to become something more, something different. Those worlds, they have no possibility of change because they lack the psychic presence. So they're a world of spirits, complete, perfect spirits in their own way. And this is where now Ashwapati is traveling. He's traveling through this plane. So the substance there is not dull, a finer substance in a subtler mold. Subtle is very thin, very delicate. Embodies the divinity earth but dreams. In our world, that is simply an expression of a hope of perfection. We want to express something complete, beautiful, perfect, absolute. We fail because there is still impurity, there is still imperfection in the stuff of our being. There is heaviness, there is unconsciousness. And because of that, we can only dream of a perfect expression, a perfect embodiment. This, in that world, they don't have that. That is where sometimes, if an artist or if a poet can connect with that world, he sees that world of beauty without any flaw. In our world, beauty has flaws, has errors, have distortions. So earthly life dreams of the world of perfect beauty. It hopes for it. It doesn't have it. It's like moving to another plane. This is the plane he's talking about. And therefore the creator, the artist, the poet, the musician, they should not at least imitate or copy what is there on earth. Because on earth there is some imperfection. They are part of that other world of vision, of experience, where the forms are absolute, forms are ideal, perfect. Its strength can overtake joy's running feet, overleaping the fixed hurdles set by time. This power, the energy of this world, overleaps the hurdles of time, hurdles, obstructions. In our world, there is a limited amount of energy you are given. For some time, you can do certain things. After that, you get tired. After that, you become perhaps incapable of transmitting that. The inspiration fails because we are like channels. Actually, the human being is a channel, is an intermediary. And the channel is not always clear, is not always pure. It transmits with what it receives, it transmits its own impurity as well. For instance, if I get an idea, but my brain is not very, very open and clear, the idea will pass through my brain, but it will also pass through the channels of my brain that are mixed with ignorance, mixed with error. And therefore, this is what we express. We express some imperfect truth, imperfect form. Whereas there is no such thing. It doesn't pass. It is not created by the mind. It is a direct connection with that world. Overleaping the fixed hurdles set by time, the rapid net of an intuitive clasp, as if it catches something with a direct connection with the world of light. Intuition is that direct connection. Captures the fugitive happiness we desire. This is what we desire. We want a perfect life on earth for men. We want to be expressions of that perfection. We cannot do it, because unless we become perfect, you may want as much as you like, you may want to manifest as much beauty, as much perfection that you can hope for. But if the being, if the instrument has not been perfected, it just cannot transmit it. This world, now he's discontinuing to describe this world. Plastic and passive to the all-shaping fire. Fire, that creative force that is at the origin of all things. And the source of all manifestation is the divine conscious force, which is the all-shaping fire. It is like all metals are molded, shaped, created, and passed through the fire. But the being has to be passive. If it passes through me and my being is not capable of receiving that inspiration, I might protest. I say, what is happening to me? I don't know. I'm going through some experience I cannot understand. I try to explain. Instead, if I'm absolutely free of any ego, this world has no ego. It has no ego, it has no psychic being, it is just a simple channel. So it is passive, it is plastic, it allows itself to be molded, to be shaped to the all-shaping fire, answers the flaming Godhead's casual touch. Even the least touch of the divine becomes an expression of marvel and of beauty. A nature lifted by a larger breath. Breath is that life force, that creative energy. Plastic and passive to the all-shaping fire, answers the flaming Godhead's casual touch. It doesn't have to be a tremendous descent. It can just be just a touch. Even that can become an expression of that which is wonderful, that which is marvelous. Immune from our inertia of response. That is the whole thing. In us there is inertia. In all the parts of our being, in every cell of the being, of our body also, and of our nature, there is the presence of inconscience. Inconscience, inertia, ignorance. Therefore the response cannot be absolutely transmitted perfectly. Whereas there it is immune, as it is free from this thing. It hears the word to which our hearts are deaf. That power of manifestation. Word is a projection of energy. Word is a divine message. A word is a sound. Sound is force. Sound is energy. But that sound transmits a divine intention. Any word transmits an intention. When I'm speaking, I'm not only making noise, I'm passing something. But in that noise, in that sound, there is some message, some intention, which is not necessarily free of error. In us, there is always the possibility of error. There is no error. There is no distortion. It allows the message of the divine mantra. This is the mantra. When the artist or the inspired sage receives that sound, that word that carries the power of the experience, if I can catch that sound, I experience the truth that is passed on by that sound. It hears the word to which our hearts are deaf. Our hearts can't hear, because there is too much ego, there is too much blindness, there is too much ignorance. That world has no such thing. It hears the word to which our hearts are deaf, adopts the seeing of immortal eyes. For a while, the poet, the artist, sees not with the eyes of the human vision. Some other vision passes through his being, if he allows himself to become a channel. This is the inspired writer, the inspired thinker, the inspired painter, the inspired musician. He is inspired. Inspiration is a breath. Breath is a force. It passes through the being. Man becomes a channel. For a while, he is not just a person. Adopts the seeing of immortal eyes and traveler on the roads of line and hue. Obviously, he's talking about painting and poetry, where you need expressions, descriptions, words which transmit certain figures, not just thoughts, but images. Images are alive, line and color. Pursue the spirit of beauty to its home. This is what happens. To pursue the spirit of beauty, Sri Aurobindo has often told us, beauty is the manifestation of the divine in the world of the physical presence. In the world of matter, in the world of the physical, beauty transmits the divine presence. That perfection is what all external forms aim at. But when we look for beauty, we give to that beauty our own preferences. I have my idea of the beautiful. You have your idea of what is beautiful. Your own background, tradition, culture, education, nature, they all define your nation of beauty. Notion of beauty. Therefore, different cultures, different civilizations, each has its own idea of beauty. But the spirit of beauty is not defined by any culture. It is the essence of the divine in the world of form. You see, that is why we don't have that permanent notion of beauty. Our notions of beauty changes from age to age, from stage to stage, according to our education, according to our background, according to our training. You learn to see beauty in one way or in another way. All these things are stages we pass through. But if you go back to the origin, the creative energy, it manifests itself. It is part of its manifestation is in form. And that is where the world of beauty has its origin. You go back to that spirit of beauty, not your definition of beauty. But if you can connect with that, thus we draw near to the all wonderful, that beauty which is the all wonderful, which is the sense of the marvelous, to be capable of being lifted up into that experience of the perfect manifestation. Thus we draw near to the all-wonderful, following his rapture in things as sign and guide. The all-wonderful is the divine, naturally, is the supreme creator. He is there, and you can recognize his presence in all things. If you know how to look at, he is present in all manifestation. So you can recognize his creation, which is a creation made for out of joy. Why does the divine create? Because he wants to. Because he chooses to. It is his right to do what he pleases. When you do something you don't have to do, you do it out of pleasure, you do it out of joy, you do it because you like to do it. So this is why you say, why did the divine create the world? Because he wanted to. He's not answerable to me. Why should he satisfy my standards? There are no standards. He has created the world of freedom. When we have certain ethical notions, you say the divine should be like this. He should bless me. He should help me. But he can't be like this. He can't hurt. He can't harm. He can do what he likes. It is his creation. It is not that he has to fit into my little narrow notions of what is right, what is wrong, what is beautiful, what is not beautiful. He is free. True beauty is free. It is free of all pre-arranged, pre-conditions, notions that we have already created for ourselves. And that is the manifestation of joy. If we do not create out of joy, we cannot create at all. We are copying. There are many who are just copyists. They imitate. But to be able to create, you create out of delight. Delight of manifestation. This is the ananda that comes out of the origin, the sat-chit ananda, the play of the divine delight. Thus we draw near to the all-wonderful, following his rapture in things as sign and guide. In this world of matter, there is the sense of the marvelous. If we know how to look, everything is marvelous. A dewdrop is marvelous. It doesn't have to be a splendid sunset. A tiny little flower has its joy, has its marvel. The perfection of the play of colors and forms. It is as if the divine artist has taken so much care to make one manifestation an expression of perfection. Beauty is his footprint showing us where he has passed. This is a wonderful line. Wherever the divine has passed, you see the beauty. Wherever the mother has passed, you see beauty. She has a, if you have read anything about her or of Sri Aurobindo, you see the love for beauty. In the world of matter, she did not like anything that was done with negligence, done in a manner of shabbiness. There has to be a sense of love for beauty. That love is what matters. I don't have the ability to create beauty, but I have to love beauty. I have to want to express it as best as I can. And this will change as I change. My ability can become an expression of greater and greater perfection, greater and greater beauty. It is as if the divine is taking me by the hand and leading me forward, showing this is the way you do it. This is exactly how she has shown certain artists how to paint. She has taught certain artists and painters how to paint, how to write, how to do physical work, do it beautifully. It is as if it is she is passing through the world of material manifestation to express that sense of perfection that is there in the world of form. Perfection is a divine principle. And a perfect form is beauty. And that is wherever he has passed, there is beauty. Beauty is his footprint showing us where he has passed. Happiness, the smile on his head. Love is his heartbeat's rhythm in mortal breasts. Happiness, the smile on his adorable face. Beauty, love and joy, they go together. In the term ananda, which is there in the original Satchitananda, Sri Aurobindo says this ananda is a triple term of beauty, love and joy. It's a combination, it's the same thing. If there is no love, there cannot be beauty. It's not a law, it's a joy. The joy of manifestation. When you offer ourselves completely to the divine, allow ourselves to be molded, if we can surrender to be ourselves to become instruments of or expressions of the divine, then that offering transmits itself in beauty. A communion of spiritual entities. Communion is actually, it's an inner connection. It's not externally shown. From within you feel a closeness, a kinship, outwardly there can be not necessarily something that is a teaching or a sentence or a word, not necessary. Within there is a response. If within we go deep inside, we find the presence is already there. And if I can commune with that presence, I can go deep in contact with that presence, I automatically become part of that presence. I can lose myself like a drop of water in the sea. The drop of water is not there anymore. It's become part of the sea. So these are, the whole world is a play of the universal energy. So this manifestation can be, in this world, a communion of spiritual entities. Entities are beings, forces, forms. This world of the subtle physical is beautiful. Its principle is beautiful, perfect, and that can be experienced only from within. A genius of creative immanence. Literally, the word genius is a spirit. Genius is not, as it is understood nowadays, a person of great capacity. The origin of the word genius is genie. Genie is spirit. Behind the world of outer expression, there is a spirit, there is a flame, there is a presence. If that is there, then there is a manifestation of greatness. If in you the flame is, the spark has been lit, you can grow out of your present state and become something much more. But that spark is this genie, that spirit. It is not somebody who is gifted with exceptional capacities. That gift is there when his whole being has opened to the contact with that force. Then he receives that force. And there are some beings who do it automatically. A few can train themselves. Geniuses receive sometimes this inspiration. They open themselves to that, you might say, inrush, some from above, something comes into them. They express themselves in thought or color, in form, in sculpture and painting and music or whatever. It doesn't necessarily last as long as they are possessed by that force. They manifest it. When that is exhausted, they usually fall back into their very ordinary state of consciousness. It's not that they're constantly on that level of purity, and because they are not yogis. But if you are a yogi, you can sustain that state, and then you have that inner connection, that inner communion. That is rarer, but that is when the creator, the artist, is also a yogi. When the artist is a yogi, then he can make use of his art as something that is keeping him in touch with the divine presence. A genius of creative immanence. Immanence is that which dwells inside you. That power that is there within. And that can become the, you might say, force that manifests itself in the external field. That power is received, it comes down from above, but it touches that spark that is inside us. If we don't have, for instance, something can come and touch my being from above, but as Mother says it in that, Sri Aurobindo says it in the Hour of God, the lamp has not been lit. There is no response. We are always in touch with the divine grace. It is coming down all the time. We don't respond because that lamp is not lit. From our side, we have to light that lamp. It can be lit. That is the immanent presence inside us. But if we say, I'm living here, I'm living in Mother's ashram, so she will do everything for me. That is something that is a form of real insincerity. we have to respond. We have to allow ourselves to be taken up by that force. Because that force is there. That force responds to what is coming down from above. From below, the answer goes. And only then the manifestation can take place. That is really the creative force. Within the artist, something is waiting to come out. That person has been perhaps made ready through many lives or many previous experiences. Today he is ready to manifest something new because that spark is already there, that immanent spark. When I can recognize that flow of some greater force and my inner being responds, then I feel that there is actually no separation between the inner life and the outer expression. Which is why the next line makes all creation deeply intimate. We are one. We don't have to select activities. We don't have to select expressions. It's part of one creation, the within and the without. What is inside us is capable of transmitting what comes from above. So what we do it on the outside, the way we express ourselves on the outside, in our walk, in our talk, in anything, is an expression of what we are inside. If inside us there is a certain opening, there is a certain connection always established with that force, whatever we do on the outside will be an expression of that presence. We don't have to make an effort. But usually we make a distinction. Our surface being is very, doesn't demand anything. It's very shallow. It's very unclean. It's easy to be on that outer level. In the inner level, you have to be in that state of receptivity, of purity, of the capacity to transmit what comes from above. That is why that creative immanence comes only when the genius is capable of receiving and transmitting whatever he has received. He is not the author of his creation. The creator is the author. He is only the instrument. So makes all creation deeply intimate. A fourth dimension of aesthetic sense, when all is in ourselves, ourselves in ours. Usually, mother, especially towards the end of her physical existence, often spoke of the fourth dimension. It's not body, life, mind only. It's the spiritual dimension. That fourth dimension is the spirit. And here he talks of the aesthetic sense. Aesthetic sense is sense of beauty is what awakens our spirit. It is from within that purity, that opening to the light, that connection with the divine. That is where the fourth dimension of aesthetic sense. It is not something that can be taught. It has to be lived. We have to become that. Whereas we can give a certain amount of training to the body, a certain amount of training to the mind, a certain amount of training to the life force, but for the inmost spirit, we have to be. It's not a training. It is, of course, it is a training in a way. We have to train ourselves, we have to prepare ourselves. There is a great deal of preparation of self-perfection, the whole of the synthesis, the yoga of self-perfection has to be preceded by the yoga of self-purification. And when we are inwardly purified of all the heaviness and the dullness and the resistance and the opposition to the divine, that all that is there in us also, we have to eliminate that. We become perfect instruments. But that is a very long, slow process. It has to start with the decision that the being makes. That this is what I want to do. It may take me lives, but if that is what I want to be, then the help comes. And the manifestation of that fourth dimension of the spirit of the sense of perfection, the sense of beauty. We are not limited to our little selves. Makes all creation, a fourth dimension of the aesthetic sense, where all is in ourselves, ourselves in all. Because there is no ego. The sense of that perfect is there in all things. You see the presence in everyone, in everything, because you are that presence. If I am that presence from within me, I am the divine. As mother could perceive the divine in all. We can't, because we haven't even perceived it always in ourselves. We make different categories in our nature. But if we are free of the ego, free of ignorance, only then you can come to that fourth dimension. We don't have the spiritual dimension. So there we are realigned to the cosmos. We are not little beings anymore. To the cosmic wideness realigns our souls. The individual becomes one with the cosmos. The individual is an expression of the Supreme, who is the transcendent, who is the universal, who is the individual. There are different modes of manifestation that the Divine chooses to express Himself through. He can express Himself through the small, He can express Himself through the vast. It is, He is free to do whatever He feels like. So our being, which likes to identify ourselves just with us, this is who I am, this is me. Who am I? I am this person. I am nobody. I am no small body. I am only that. If I can say, that is perhaps the Vedantic notion of soham. I am that. I am not me. I don't exist as a separate individual. Where all is in ourselves, ourselves in all. To the cosmic wideness realigns our souls. A kindling rapture joins the seer and seen. It's like a flame. With joy, that ananda, rapture, we are swept away by that joy. Where the seer becomes the seen. You become what you see. You love what you are. You are. You are that. You are the divine. You are not separate from Him. So I am not worshipping the divine. I don't exist. There's nothing but the divine. The one who worships and the one who is worshipped are the same. The adorer and the adored are one. The sense of separateness, of identity, of a small individuality, that is not there anymore. So a kindling rapture joins the seer and seen. The craftsman and the craft grow in the one. The creator and the creation. Craftsman is the one who gives a shape to something. Craft is the way of making that manifest. The method of manifesting and the one who does the work. Who is it all? It's only the divine. I don't exist. He's using my hand or he's using my voice. What have I to do with all this? Because I've become one with him. That is the ultimate identity. Yoga, after all, is oneness. It is joining. You become that. So that craftsman and the craft, he's using the image of someone who deals with form. The craftsman works with form. He doesn't work with thought. When you say thinker or writer, it's not that. The craftsman deals with shapes and forms and expressions. Achieve perfection by the magic throb and passion of their close identity. That is when the creator or the artist manifests perfection, because he has become one with that force that is working through him. He has become that. He has become the painting. That is why he can paint it. For a while he is not himself. That is sometimes described by the mother. She speaks of certain artists like Michelangelo, like Leonardo. She speaks of him that he was a yogi. couldn't have done what he has done if he is just creating, thinking for himself and giving a shape to his thought or his ideas. He is simply a channel. But that channel has been so perfected, so elevated, that there is almost nothing he could not do. He becomes a being. Of course, he's a very exceptional being because he was Sri Aurobindo. Through him, as if the whole universal manifestation could be transmitted. He was not just an artist, he was not just a poet, he was an engineer, or he was a scientist, he was in the world of anatomy, whatever human expression wanted to attempt, he tried, he did. He was the one who was thought of the flying machine way back. He made plans of the submarine that would go under the water. All these things, that is as if no limit to the ability or the extent of his dreams and possibilities. The world was not yet ready for that, so he did not take it far enough. But that is the whole possibility, that the being can be used to manifest that which is part of the divine intention. So achieve perfection by the magic throb and passion of their close identity. All that we slowly piece from gathered parts. This is what we do. Slowly we, when we are not like this, so we, little by little, we try to acquire some knowledge, some mastery, some development, a little at a time, stage by stage. It is slow. It is always imperfect. All that we slowly piece from gathered parts, or by long labor stumblingly evolve, when we try to grow from what we are and become something more, there is also we who are not yet perfect. So when we try to climb up, the truth is that from time to time we slide down, we fall down, we climb up again, we fall down again. And so it is not only slow, it is incomplete. It will not be a complete evolution. We can't straight climb up to the heights because there is so much that is still heavy and dull that drags us down. So, or by long labor stumblingly evolve, is there self-born? In that world, this evolution is not there. In that world, the world of change is not there. The psychic world is where the change comes. We have a psychic, therefore we can change. That is the benefit of being a human being. We don't have to stay the way we are. In these worlds, there is no psychic presence. They are complete in themselves. So there, in that world, they are they're self-born by its eternal right. In us too, the intuitive fire can burn. If we can wipe off our ego, our sense of self-confidence, we are very sure of ourselves. We think we know so much. If we can become simple, humble, modest, wipe off our ego, then that force can pass through us also. An agent light, it is coiled in our folded hearts. That deeper soul, that consciousness is waiting to come out. It is as if it is coiled within. We have two souls, the surface soul, which is the body, the life, the mind, all that we have acquired through our long, you might say, training and development. And inside, the Supreme Presence has been waiting to emerge, waiting for us to lose our dependence on the external knowledge and training and self-confidence that mind has taught us or body has taught us, allow that force, inner force, to express itself without interference. We must not interfere with the divine when he tries to manifest through us. He is there inside. But we all the time we interfere. We think we are very good. We think we know on everything. We understand everything. So there, that intuitive fire, it is waiting. He's using that flame, that presence. It is waiting in our folded hearts. As if our hearts are closed, we have to open ourselves. On the celestial levels is its home. Where has that fire come from? It has come from the heights. Descending, it can bring those heavens here. If we allow ourselves to become channels, that world of perfect harmony and perfect beauty, which has been man's dream, can be transmitted. When we want to do something marvelous, wonderful, we usually come in with our own notions. I want to build a house. It is, this house has to be like this, because that is the only sense of a perfect house. If I don't have that attitude, if I say, the house is already built actually on another plane, I have to allow that inspiration to pass through me. If you're going to create the Matri Mandir, it was already ready long ago. It's human effort which built it. Human error also came in. There were difficulties and problems because the human being was not always ready. All that perfection is already ready. It is already there. I'm not talking of just Matri Mandir. The whole universe is a Matri Mandir. The whole universe is an ashram. If we allow that to come to us, it is waiting to be manifested on earth. But we come in with our ready-made ideas of right and wrong and good and bad and all these egos and all the clashes, and the thing gets distorted or the thing gets postponed. It is never done the way it should be done. Never. But otherwise, it can bring those heavens here, which is what we have always had, the dream of manifesting a divine life on earth. But rarely burns the flame, nor burns for long. The joy it calls from those diviner heights brings brief, magnificent reminiscences. Why do I have the dream of that perfection? It is as if once upon a time I came from there. That is my origin. And that memory is somewhere there. It's the soul's memory, not the mind's memory. And that is why we have this dream. So these magnificent reminiscences and high splendid glimpses of interpreting thought. So thought has to happen because it has to be transmitted by man, and man is primarily a mental being. But thought does not guide, it just transmits that kind of thought. But not the utter vision and delight. This we don't have as yet. A veil is kept. Captives of the beauty and the joy, our souls forget, lest a veil is kept. Something is still held back, lest captives of the beauty and the joy, our souls forget to the highest to aspire. So you see, this is again a consolation. Why do we not find it easy to manifest that perfect beauty? Because that is not everything. Something more has to be transmitted by us. So if we are only seekers of beauty and joy, truth, power, knowledge, they have to be also expressed. So if you become a captive only of beauty, then these other principles are not, they don't get a chance to manifest themselves. So our souls forget to aspire to that supreme who is everything, who is not just one principle, who is the all. We forget to aspire to that. Each person follows his path, but when you reach the top, there are no paths. There is the all. Often that's what happens. That is why perhaps we are follow our path and we make mistakes and we fall back, we fall down, we climb again. And he says, this is part of the plan. This is the world of perfect manifestation. It's not the ultimate reality, the ultimate experience. Because we forget to aspire to the highest. So we'll stop here today.
Where we started. Nature lifted by a larger breath. Here larger breath, he means...
Divine force. Breath is an energy, no? This world of nature is energy, but there is a greater energy that is coming from elsewhere. Because all growth comes from energy. But the energy is not a physical energy. There's different energies.